Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. Let me begin Tuesday Topics, as I often do, by expressing my appreciation to the people who turn a rambling discussion into a meaningful ACB radio program that's broadcast on Monday evenings in the U.S. for the first time at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which, of course, in the rest of the world, or most of it, is actually Tuesday, hence Tuesday Topics. I'd like to express my appreciation first to Rachel and Larry from Orlando, who are actually not only participating with us, but are actually recording this, to Dave Williams, who edits this program and turns it into an effective reasonably sane-sounding radio program, and to Talking Communities and George Vise, who have made iVocalize a reality and have made it available to the American Council of the Blind. So I'd like to thank all those folks for what they're doing. Last week, we spent our program talking some about some of the barriers to employment that exist for people who are blind and some of the characteristics that a blind person ought to possess if they're going to be successful at acquiring and retaining a job. This week, I thought that it might be interesting to take the situation, perhaps, of employment from a slightly different perspective and to spend some time talking about a few issues that that I think have a fairly large impact on how successful people who are blind are. One of those is the quality or lack thereof of the vocational rehabilitation counseling and services that they receive from whatever their agency for the blind in their particular state might be. And the second thing that I thought it might be interesting to take a look at are some of the resources that are out there nowadays that didn't exist when folks like me were looking for careers that actually enable people who are blind to acquire more information about possible careers and also to get into contact with potential mentors in the employment field. So those are some of the things that I hope we will accomplish tonight. And I guess it might be interesting to begin by asking people whether their experience with vocational rehabilitation services has, for the most part, been good, bad, or indifferent.
This is Rachel. Yeah, I'll tackle that one. My experience has been actually pretty good. And I'm not saying that just because I work for them now, but before I ever even thought I would even work with our state agency, I was a client from school on up. And I think what really worked well for me is that I went in kind of with an idea of what I wanted to do. And I discussed with my counselor what that was. And we talked about the pros and cons and what it would take to accomplish the goals that I had. So I think what really helps is if you go in at least with something on the table, because I think we can actually go into this a little bit later, but I think where some people tend to feel that their experience may not have been what they were looking for was when maybe they didn't go in with some ideas on the table. And I think for me, I kind of felt like my relationship with my DBS counselors, they were definitely positive, and it was more of a partnership. You know, I was going out there, and they were serving me. They were helping me out. So I did everything I could to get the most benefit I could out of their services.
And this is Larry Turnbull from Orlando. And my experience with Division of Blind Services, well, I guess I could say it was fair, I guess somewhere in the middle of the road. They were pretty much positive in what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to do when I went in there. I wanted to be in the computer programming. I figured out it was my calling when I was in high school. Unfortunately, at the time, I wasn't sure how I would get the help or the hands-on experience in most of the state universities today. And after high school, I went to the Vocational Technical Center in St. Augustine to advance my computer career. And they, after I graduated, recommended me to DeVry Institute of Technology. At the time, the closest DeVry was in Atlanta, Georgia, so I had to fight tooth and nail with Division of Blind Services to get them to pay tuition to go to a college that was, in that time, not a state university. It was a private technical school. And second of all, it was out of state. But I proved to them that it was something that, you know, the class ratios were smaller. more. I could get the help I needed, and I got a lot more lab time than you normally would in the universities at that time, because most of the time in the university, you'd get about 5 to 10 hours lab time. At DeVry, you're getting about 35 to 40, which was a pretty significant difference. And it took a lot of fighting on it. And as far as helping me find jobs, a lot of the Division of Blind Services, Florida and elsewhere, really didn't do well at locating me jobs that fit my skills. Most of them wanted me to go to, you know, be a secretary or receptionist or something like that, which is something I really didn't want to do and still don't. And also, I guess pretty much they always wanted me to go for something way lower than my expectations, and I ended up getting the jobs that I got very successful at on my own. And that's pretty much my view of it.
This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. When I graduated from high school, I wasn't really sure of what I wanted to do at the time. And then, but my relationship with the services for the blind got better as I went along. First, I went to back when they had the shelter workshops. Michigan Industries for the Blind, they don't have that anymore. And it was you need rooms and things like that. But I went through the training program, as I said, and then for a while I decided I'd try piano tuning. I didn't want to stay in that situation because I didn't think that would really amount to too much as far as I was concerned. It would just sort of be a dead end. I mean, back in the 60s, there were still people working in sheltered workshops, and they didn't really, they'd been there for years, and that's all they pretty much did. And I was tuning, and then I learned to be a dictaphone typist, and I thought that would be something I'd like to do, and at that. And then sometimes I think the services for the blind were kind of, they didn't call me a lot. I think maybe my fault was probably I should have called them more to find out what was going on, and then they would, one time they suggested I get into vending work at vending stand program, but I went through the training, and my counselor suggested I go for rehab training in Kalamazoo, and then when I got out, I went to Flint, but after I got through the training, I kept bugging my counselors to make sure I knew that they knew what was going on, and then afterwards they helped me get the job I got through the state, and then since then I did other duties, and I've been retired for 8 years or so.
My name is Sam. I'm from Chicago. I also graduated from DeVry University, the one here in Chicago, and I attended back when it was called DeVry Institute of Technology as well. What I've observed around here with the rehab system, the word informed choice seems to be used a lot when talking about VR, and it seems that there needs to be informed choice on one of two ends. Either the client has to be informed or the counselor has to be informed, and what I've observed is that the counselors don't seem to often know as much as the clients as far as knowing about services, what's out there, available options. I'm currently in the VR system right now looking for employment, and I tend to be pretty resourceful. I tend to try to find out what I need to know about my options to find out what I need to do or what I need to get where I want to go. For the most part, my counselors have been helpful in the sense that they've gotten me what I've needed in terms of equipment and software, but as far as the clients who don't have as good of a way or ambition to stay informed, I think they're really struggling because they don't know what's out there. The clients don't know what's out there, and the counselors don't know what to tell them.
Agencies for the blind are more consumer-oriented than maybe back years ago in the 60s and up until the mid-70s, because now, they ask for our input on things like that, but maybe back then they thought they knew what was best for us.
It's probably worth pointing out, though, as Sam did, that it was necessary to legislate informed choice into the federal law rather than being able to expect counselors to set up a partnership or to be sure that blind folks actually had the information that they need in order to make a good decision when they're part of the rehabilitation system. What I think I hear many of us saying is that while the Division of Blind Services, or whatever we call it in whatever state we're in, is probably pretty good at providing the resources that we need in order to get to a career, they fall down substantially in being able to offer clients good vocational advice or in being able, assuming good vocational decisions have already been made by the client, to be of much assistance assistance in enabling clients to reach the potential that they believe they have in their chosen vocational field. And I think that that's actually a pretty serious thing to be saying about a system that is supposed to employ experts who are supposed to know about the job market, who are supposed to be able to offer good advice, and who at least in theory are supposed to be able to help those individuals who are not sure what they want to do to make good and meaningful and realistic decisions, but based on as much potential as they have, rather than what seems to happen on the lowest common denominator, i.e. if we've got a job as a telephone marketer, it doesn't really matter if you have a BA in computer programming. Go ahead and take that job until something better comes along so we can close your case and say how successful we are at having met your needs as a blind person and found you full-time employment.
Like, I've heard these stories among blind people that they talk about what they want to do, and then sometimes some of these counselors, they discourage them from going into that field because they figure that it can't be done or something.
I think sometimes counselors have a tendency to be less confident in the abilities of people who are blind than blind people are in their own ability. But I think the other significant thing about the group of folks who've been talking tonight is that most of us actually had a pretty clear idea of what it was we wanted to do, and therefore truly were able to enter into a meaningful partnership with our vocational rehabilitation counselors. The question is, how does VR do with individuals who really have no notion of what kind of career they want to go into, what should they do, and what options do people who are blind now have that perhaps they didn't have when we were coming along? What is a blind person to do who really isn't sure what he's capable of, who really isn't certain what kind of career he or she wants to go into, who really doesn't have a good notion of where they want to go? What would you say to, let's say, a young person coming out of high school in terms of the kinds of steps that they need to take?
I would actually say a few things. One is read up on books on different careers. Talk to people. Go to a lot of colleges, you know, might sponsor some job fairs or whatever. Do the research. Just kind of talk to people. Sometimes the best way to get information is not even necessarily going to be that book knowledge, but the experience that somebody can hand down and the information that people can hand down who have actually been in those jobs. The other thing is, I know we do this here in our area. I can speak for our district only. I don't know what the deal is with some of the other commissions or divisions for blind services. We have someone on our staff that whose sole purpose in their job description is to assist people with jobs and development, and all the way down from helping to create those job opportunities or find those job opportunities. There's probably a little bit of both there. To being able to figure out how to work those jobs and engineer them so that the person, the blind individual, is able to successfully do that job. I'm kind of backtracking a little bit as I think of some things, but another thing is I know we also have here a system that the blind individual, along with the counselor, certainly discuss with your counselor those types of jobs that your skills are kind of suited for. That's not to say that those are the jobs that you necessarily want to do or would end up doing, but at least it's somewhere to start. Look at the skills you have, and there's some kind of career inventory kind of things on computer systems. A lot of places have those. Go through those kind of things, and it kind of gives you a better idea as to, well, what kind of jobs are out there. It's so easy that when you're in school to just focus in on the school work and have no idea what kind of jobs are out there. It's an incredible list on some of these job and career inventories. Take a look at those and have something to work with. The other thing is there's a Career Connect through AFB, and there was an individual that I would love to have gotten on here with us tonight, but who has participated in that. But it's where you can have a mentoring experience and deal with somebody who might be in a job that you're interested in and talk to them directly.
Yeah, this is Lisa Hall in San Antonio, Texas. One suggestion I would make is that each blind consumer should be given an opportunity to network with blind people, whether it's National Federation of the Blind, which is an organization that I am affiliated with, or the American Council of the Blind, or any other blindness group where you network with other blind people that are actually working in various fields. I'm president of the National Association of Blind Office Professionals, and I get calls all the time, people seeking advice on careers, especially in the clerical field.
One of the questions that people have kind of raised quietly is that blind people need to have a pretty clear notion of what their skills are, and that their counselors also need to have a fairly good notion of where a person who is blind is in terms of abilities and competencies. My question is to all of you, how ought an inventory of those skills to be developed so that the counselor and the blind person really do know what the skill set they have is?
Blind people, just like the rest of the world, the sighted world, that is, the only thing I would think is they would have to just kind of like find their skills, you know, believe in their dreams and try to, you know, scale them down to where they're realistic. I mean, you don't try to go way off the deep end thinking you could do something that, you know, realistically you can't, like pilot or something like that until the technology comes out. But that's pretty much what you'd have to do, is just figure out what you're good at and kind of keep that in the back of your mind when you're in high school. And once that happens, then you could talk to the Visual Blind Services counselor or even a career coach or something like that, and, you know, just kind of brainstorm it. I think this is something that blind people are not alone in trying to figure out what they want to do. Granted, it is more difficult at times, but I think we're pretty much in the same boat with everybody else when it comes to trying to figure out what you want to do in life.
This is Lisa Hall again. One of the other suggestions which seems to be helpful in terms of planning your career, is not only check out different articles that are printed in newspapers that will tell you what are some of the hot jobs are, but check out the Occupational Outlook Handbook. Because of the internet, I find that I'm able to research a lot more stuff than ever before. Prior to that, we had to, you know, find other ways to gather information. One of the areas there's not any government information on, and this is an area that I am currently seeking work on. I'm a certified Braille transcriber. I'm a current student at Northwest Vista College, working on certification as a textbook Braille transcriber. One of the areas is there's nothing in the Occupational Outlook Handbook in reference to Braille transcription at all. Braillists, they're not consistent across the country, and they vary from company to company on their job responsibilities.
I think you've made a good point, Lisa, actually. And by the way, welcome. We're very glad you've joined us tonight. One of the points that I think I hear you making is that a lot of the elements that have been produced, while they're valuable, like the Occupational Outlook Handbook, there is a paucity of information that tailors that Occupational Outlook Handbook to the specific needs and capabilities of people who are blind. One of the things that I have a fairly clear memory of when going through some skill testing was that it turns out that I was a visual learner, and the career that was recommended as the top one for me was actually that of an airline pilot. I was not successful in gaining employment as an airline pilot, but I think that it indicates the degree to which many of the tests that are given to people who are blind aren't normed for those of us who are blind, and therefore produce results that I don't think make a lot of sense. Sam left a text message. message for us, which essentially said that we also need to be prepared to go out there and volunteer and become involved in things like internships. And maybe, Sam, you could expand a little on that.
Yeah, this was actually something I was going to bring up after you asked your first question, because I'm actually in the same situation. I'm in the current situation right now where I've obtained a bachelor's degree in computer information systems, and now I have to figure out what to do with it. You know, when I grew up, I thought I wanted to be a programmer, and going through college, I realized that I really don't enjoy coding very much. So do I become a programmer and make six figures, or do I go into the IT field, or do I go volunteer for the Peace Corps? I mean, I've got a wide array of options. And one thing I have done is I've begun an internship at the Catholic Guild for the Blind, where I work training people using adaptive technology, using JAWS and Word and stuff like that. And it's given me an opportunity to figure out what I want and what I don't want to do, as well as giving me some experience in the adaptive technology field. Of course, all employers, they're looking for experience, and that's pretty important to have on your resume. So I try to encourage people to get involved in internships and to volunteer their time whenever they can. One thing this opportunity has helped me to realize is that teaching is not a career that I want to be going into full time. I can explain things fairly articulately. I enjoy working with people, but I have very little patience, especially for people who don't put forth an effort to study outside of class and learn the material. And that's not a good skill to have as a teacher when you have to work with all kinds of people. So, you know, if you can't figure out what you want to do, then at least figure out what you don't want to do. Go out there and get some experience. At least I can say now, well, I don't want to be an adaptive technology trainer 40 hours a week, because I've learned from this experience volunteering 4 hours a week a little bit of what the field's like, and that's going to help me narrow my decision somewhat.
I got the degree, and of course I went on and now I'm on my second pretty successful job working for a pretty large company. I would say to most of the blind people that are trying to figure out what they want to do is, do process of elimination. If you can't figure out what you do want to do, figure out what you would least like to do and kind of narrow it down there. And there are a lot of resources out there to try to figure out where the job market is and what jobs are the most popular, and they can kind of base it from there. And that's pretty much all I got here.
I would say, too, that some of my best jobs I got through volunteering and by accident, and ironically enough, I did want to do AT training 40 hours a week, and I actually did that for 6 years as a result of a just kind of chance volunteering kind of thing. And it really, that's a field I did not know I wanted to go into, and turns out I ended up doing it for 6 years and loved it. So you really do, when you get those opportunities to volunteer. And the nice thing about volunteering is there's nothing to be lost there. You're not in a pressure situation where you know you have to pay the bills with this. You're not stuck doing this forever because it's a volunteer position. So have fun with it, learn from it, and really allow it to work for you in determining whether this is something that you would like to do.
Yeah, that's a good way to approach things. I think you can learn that way being a volunteer. But I think that there are a lot of opportunities today that we didn't have. If you go back 40 years, I mean, you never would have thought back then about all the computer technology we have today and all the web and all that. We wouldn't have dreamed that we'd have what we have today.
I know that some of us went to schools for the blind. I know that Larry did. I know that Rachel did. I know that Gary did. I'd be interested to know whether Sam and Lisa did. And I would also be interested, if you didn't, to know how much vocational counseling you got while you were in high school. So let me turn it over to either Sam or Lisa, whoever hits their button first.
I went to school for the blind, Louisiana School for the Blind, and I did get some counseling before I graduated from high school. At that time, I wasn't really sure exactly what I wanted to do. Another area I had thought about was computer programming. I have thought about wanting to go into teaching music, those three different areas. And one of the things that really hurt me big time was stories. I was told by one of my high school teachers, and I won't say who, that I was not college material, and that really hurt me. I didn't know what it was. And when I graduated in 83, of course, I went on, got rehab training, started looking for work after the rehab training. And it wasn't until 1994 when I went to another rehab program run by the National Federation of the Blind, the Louisiana Center for the Blind, until I finally started taking my first college course. And when I took my first college course, I realized that I could survive by taking college courses.
Well, I wasn't, I guess, would be considered what you call college material. I only had a C average in high school, and I think that the state of Michigan wouldn't have paid for me to go to college, you know, like they do. I mean, because I didn't have a high enough grade average for them to warrant the amount of money that they would to spend for me to go through college, I think, probably.
All right, well, I guess I'm the lucky one here. I get to talk about the mainstream life. Ironically, I have a family of three blind children, and I'm the only one who has not made a visit to the state school for the blind, even though all three of us pretty much were mainstream for most of our schooling. I went to public high school, supposedly one of the best high schools in the country. The question wasn't whether or not we were going to college, but where we were going to college. And so that's primarily what the transition planning was for. It was I did have an itinerant teacher that I worked with every day, and the primary focus was, you know, where are you going to go to college, and how are you going to survive coping through college, you know, get the resources that you need to order your books and do that kind of stuff. And so there wasn't really a lot of focus on what I was going to do. I went to college not even knowing what I was going to do, ended up dropping out, going through a medical transcription program at the Lighthouse for the Blind and going into that field for 2 years and then going back to college. So in my situation, I didn't really find that there was a big focus on, you know, what career are you going to go to. I mean, I always thought I was going to be a computer programmer, but I'm not even sure I want to do that anymore. So I definitely think there needs to be better support for kids who are in public high school to figure out, especially since they may not get the same level of training in various skills as people who go to blind schools. Maybe their daily living skills or their braille skills or whatever are not as strong, and so maybe they have the aptitude to do something, but they haven't received the training that they need to do it well.
I think one of the neat things that happened, I also, in addition to going to the blind school, I also took several classes at the local public high school, and it was a really good mix for me. I really enjoyed it. I got quite a bit out of those classes. But one of the things that I participated in that the local high school did was something called Career Days, and basically they would have several professionals come in. There were a couple things I did, actually. The Career Days where they had the several professionals come in, and you would basically change classes like you would during a normal school day, but rather than picking going to your classes, you picked, say, you know, 5-6 careers, however long the whole career day lasted, and went to that room where they were talking about that career. And I really found that to be interesting. I can't even remember at this point what I picked. It'd be interesting to find out what I picked then, up against what I'm doing now. But I thought that was really neat. And I went in right along with all the other kids in that high school. The other thing I participated in, which I can't remember now whether it was affiliated at all with the blind school or if it was affiliated with a public high school, was where you job shadowed. In fact, I job shadowed one of the... Okay, I think Larry's just telling me that was the blind school. Where I job shadowed a local legislator. And I found that really interesting as well. I sat up on the floor with them and went through the whole day. I think that some schools probably tend to do better than others in the way of kind of career information, but I found that I got information from both sources, which was really good. But I did a lot of reading as well, so I went out there and looked for information too.
I think one of the areas I think that needs to be improved on, and this is my own opinion, you know, before a blind student, whether they're mainstream in a regular public school or whether they're at a school for the blind. I think they really need to network with blind adults who are role models. I know in the public schools there's not enough of that going on at this point, because they really, young people really do need to be around blind adults who can be good role models, who can provide advice and guidance and tell them what is to be expected when they do go out into the work world and what is to be expected. That is one of the areas I believe that's lacking.
I don't know whether people who go to college always know what they want to do until they've been there a couple of years, but I don't know. I've never been there, but I went to a school for the blind all the way through. But I can tell you a story about a friend of mine, or a girl, or a lady here in Lansing, who one time got a job in here in Lansing, and she didn't tell them where she went to school. She said she went to a school in Lansing. I think, well, I don't know, maybe whether she got the job here or not, I don't know, but she didn't tell them where she went to school. And then they hired her, but she said, well, you probably wouldn't have hired me if I told you where she went to school. And then she said it was school for the blind. They said probably not. So I don't know. Some people, I think, have a feeling that the fact that a person goes to a school for the blind works against them when they try to find a job. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know what you folks think.
We all must have a positive attitude about ourselves and our blindness. This is one of the biggest barriers when you do try to get into employment. Is that employers, the general society, they all seem to have misconceptions and misunderstandings of blindness.
There were some fascinating statistics that came out, in the late 80s from the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation at the federal level, Rehab Services Administration, concerning the placement of blind people. And the general findings of these statistics were that in virtually 100% of the cases, blind people were able to do the job for which they were hired. That is, ability to do the job was not the issue. What seemed to result in blind people losing their jobs in the first 6 months was that folks who were blind were simply not ready for the social interaction that is a core element of the world of work. They had expectations of what people would do for them that were unrealistic. They had expectations of what they needed to do that were not realistic. And so it wasn't that they didn't have the skills. It was that they didn't have the social and societal readiness for work that made it possible for them to keep jobs. And I think those statistics are important because I think that they do point to something that we've talked about earlier, and that is that blind folks somehow need to get out far sooner than they do and far more frequently than they do into opportunities to interact with the rest of society, either in a work experience or a job shadowing or a volunteer mode.
Well, that's true. I think that attitude is a lot to do with it. I think that people probably, they don't let a person go from a job because their lack of ability to do the job is probably as much as because of their attitude toward other people or toward the job or toward different things.
Well, you know, Paul, a lot of it has to do with opportunity. Just thinking back to my mainstreaming, you know, I was put in an adaptive PE because obviously I couldn't play dodgeball with the rest of the sighted people in PE class. And so that's going to have an effect on the amount of social interaction that I have. And if you think about it, a lot of entry-level jobs that sighted people get when they're in high school, a lot of them are closed off to blind people, you know, working cash register at a Jewel or a grocery store or something, or, you know, jobs that require some degree of vision to be able to perform the job. And so I think whether the blind person in high school cannot perform the job or whether they just think they can't, you know, maybe they tend to not apply for as many summer jobs maybe as their sighted counterparts because they're not aware of what they can do or they have fewer opportunities available. available to them. When I was in high school, I actually went through a program in the summer that was designed to prepare blind high school students for employment, and they gave us a part-time temporary job, very menial labor, minimum wage type job, and I actually managed to keep that job for maybe a year and a half, so I did pretty well with that. But I think there need to be more outreach types of things like that out there for blind students who are mainstream to get some work experience. And also, I agree with Lisa. I think ACB and some of these organizations need to do more outreach and mentoring and get out there and speak with the blind students coming up and help them to realize what they're capable of. I know the NFB really believes very strongly in mentoring and education. I think ACB needs to take a lesson from that and reach out more to the blind students in the schools.
Sam, you actually made some of the points in your last comments that I had sort of expected to hear, and I think they're really important ones. One of the things that happens, I think, to a lot of kids in mainstreaming is that the time they have with their itinerant teacher tends to be spent getting tests ready and doing work that classroom teachers aren't prepared to do. And very often the time that other students are doing vocational counseling, students who are blind are doing the extra, quote, skill classes that they need in order to be successful. And I think also there are expectations that are built for people who are blind. And I go back to what both Lisa and Sam said. And I think that in mainstream environments, often parents don't expect enough, and often teachers don't expect enough, and therefore very often the blind person does not expect enough of him or herself. And so certainly having adults who are effective and competent role models is actually an excellent idea. I mentioned last week that our local chapter did a career day for the Dade County High Schools, and we worked with the local chapter of NFB as well. So it was a joint activity where we as consumers manned tables and encouraged kids from the 7th through the 12th grade who were visually impaired to go around from table to table all morning and talk with us about the particular jobs that we did. And I think that was really helpful. I also think that we need to somehow get to parents more. I'm certainly cognizant of the NFB's work with parents, and we in ACB are attempting to work more closely with NAPFI, the National Association of Parents of the Visually Impaired. They typically hold sessions in concurrence with our convention now, and it does give both them and their kids an opportunity to interact with adults who are blind. A number of our state affiliates are also now incorporating special programs for young folks, whether they're in high school or perhaps early college, that are doing outreach to specifically encourage those folks in and to set up tracks that provide them with some specific and to some degree separate programs that can cater to their specific needs. And I think all of these directions are good ones and are ones that will in the long run lead us towards a place where blind people will be in a better position to make good decisions for themselves.
If you really look down to it, it starts with the child and his parents. A lot of times the parents will over-shelter them and not let them do what they're capable of doing. And then from there, it would go on to the teachers. And then from there, you know, it gives the child more confidence. That's really where it all starts, is the child and the parent. Now, if you're talking about somebody who lost their sight as an adult, then you're talking a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, that's sometimes I think that's the hardest part, you know, because like when I was at the rehab center in Kalamazoo, I mean, there were some of us who were born blind and it was always that way. And then there were those who had to go to the rehab because they lost their sight, some of it through either accident or someone had an accident and lost it. And then a lot of it through diabetes, probably retinitis pigmentosa is one that causes it. And some of the diseases of the eye that cause blindness. But that's a different ballgame than those who who were been blind from birth.
The placement rate for people who lose their sight later in life is about twice, and in some states, three times the rate of placement for folks who are congenitally blind. And I think that's actually a pretty significant statistic. Now, obviously, part of that is due to the fact that some of the folks who are served are individuals who haven't lost really substantial amounts of vision and therefore are relatively easier to place. But I think that if we really looked hard, we would find that even if we're looking at equal visual loss, we're going to find that those individuals who've lost vision later in life are actually far more placeable because they have a work ethic and a notion of who they are that often doesn't apply to folks who are congenitally blind. Want to spend just a few minutes talking about some resources, because I think that one of the things that we've all said is that there are so many more options out there now for blind folks to actually do some research and get involved with other blind people who are already working in ways that are significantly helpful, that may even lessen the degree to which blind people need to rely on counselors within divisions of blind services to be their primary resource in terms of making decisions about careers. Someone mentioned Career Connect. Career Connect is a multifaceted website with a range of options on it. One of the kind of old standbys that rehabilitation counselors utilized was a thing called the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, and it was a very boring and very difficult book to read. I think that one of the things that that is very cool about Career Connect is much of the information that's contained in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles is organized in a much more accessible way so that folks who are blind who are interested can actually get to it. Lisa, in fact, just left us a text message to say that she is a subscriber to Career Connect.
When I was researching different careers, I have in the past, not recently, but have in the past communicated with other people in the field in the area that I was considering at one point, and I found it to be very, very helpful when communicating with people within those fields. Since I have been a user of Career Connect and I have been on the list for people to contact me, I haven't had anybody in the kind of fields that I've been in. I've been involved in customer service field for the 17 years, and worked as a clerk typist for 8 years, and I worked as a telephone operator for 5 years, and I worked as an associate at Sears for 4 years. Now I'm kind of in between stuff, between trying to finish up school at Northwest Vista College and also doing my job hunting, hoping to either teach Braille, teach adaptive technology, or new Braille transcription. And I could go in either one of those three directions.
Thanks, Lisa. Did you find Career Connect to be helpful for you? And if you did, what were the particular ways that you thought it was good?
Well, one of the things that helped was finding out how they managed to get into the field. What kind of educational things that they took and the path that they took to get where they are, what type of equipment that they used in the job. I find those areas to be very, very helpful.
One of the things that that Career Connect also does is it does provide a lot of advice in terms of job interviews, in terms of preparing a resume, in terms of giving you opportunities to look at what your skill sets are by looking at a broad range of questions that focus on what your skills are and what your interests might be. And I think all of those things are helpful and, in fact, would have probably been immensely useful for someone like myself many years ago. There is another site which is called eSight Networks. And eSight Networks is another career-oriented outfit, and they do some really interesting things as well. One of the things that they do that I have found fascinating over the past couple of years is they raise a particular issue every week and encourage people who are working to provide comments on that particular issue. For example, how would you handle an individual at work work who was essentially not treating you appropriately given your disability. They have actually just gone to a much more blog-like environment at the beginning of 2005. But it is a site that's well worth taking a look at. The other thing that's beginning to emerge, and there are a couple of sites where it's possible to do this, are places where you can maintain what is called a career portfolio. Two of the places that I would urge people to take a look at are a place called FACTS, which is a state-operated system that is accessible through the college system, FACTS.org. And it's essentially a section whose primary purpose is to help people transferring from the community college to upper division universities in the state. FACTS.org, I think, Sam, but if that's wrong, get back to me and I'll give you more information. The point about FACTS.org is there are three online career interest inventories as well as some opportunities for career exploration, and a relatively small segment on the development and maintenance of career portfolios. The place that I've seen that's done the best job of career portfolios and also has some really valuable questions about choosing a career and about where you are in terms of whether you're in a position to make good decisions is the Career Center at Florida State University. It's a little bit of a pain to get there because you've got to go to www.fsu.edu and you need to create a login account for yourself. There is no charge for that. You do not have to be a student of FSU to do that. Then if you go to the Career Center, there really are a lot of resources that are extremely valuable, in my opinion, particularly for helping folks make good decisions about professional careers. People coming out of college in particular, I think, would benefit from a fairly lengthy visit to the FSU website. Let me spend about 30 seconds talking about the idea of a portfolio so that people will have a better idea of what it is. A portfolio is a place on the internet where an individual can store things that he believes are relevant to employment. So if you've done a paper that particularly relates to the kind of job that you're looking at going into, that paper might be up there. And you may choose to actually enable a potential employer to actually get to that information. And since we often travel around a lot, a portfolio is also a good place to keep a current resume, as well as a series of cover letters that you may have written for employment opportunities, so that instead of having to reinvent the wheel every time you go to apply for a new job, you can actually take a look at what you've already got in your portfolio to see whether some of that material might be helpful. But the whole idea of the portfolio is to showcase your ability to potential employers and to create a storage place where you can actually maintain documents that directly relate to what you might need when you are very quickly trying to apply for a job that's about to close.
You've probably often heard it's not what you know, but who you know. And even though we'd like to think that we're going to get a job solely based on what we know, oftentimes, I would put it this way, just don't rule out the who you know part. Some of your best advocates are going to be people that you know who might happen to know somebody who's looking for somebody to do a specific job. Don't rule it out. Tell everybody that you know what your skills are. The person who's going to be the most interested in finding this job for you is going to be you. So you're going to be the one that's going to end up working the hardest to do it. And talk to people that you know. Let them know what your skills are. Let them know what you're interested in. Just, oh, you know, by the way, if you happen to hear of any jobs that are in that line, let me know. And a lot of times you can get hooked up through people that they know and go from there.
So let's go around one more time to kind of end this evening's program with any final thoughts that people might have concerning the current state of careers, or what they would say to young folks who are looking for jobs, or perhaps any thoughts that you might have to end our two-part series on employment. Gary in Michigan.
With all the opportunities that are coming down the pipe today with people and all the helpful resources they have today with the internet and things of that nature, I'm wondering if that would tend to make the idea of the placement, the counselor for the services for the blind or agencies, I'm wondering if that would make their role obsolete in the future. And I'm wondering if maybe, it seems like I'm hearing that there's a possibility that there might be even private agencies for the blind competing with the state agency. I wonder where that's going to head in the near future.
Interesting questions, Gary. Sam, final thoughts from you?
Networking and experience are your biggest assets. Try to get yourself connected with as many resources as possible, like the Career Connect that was mentioned. Try to get as much experience as possible. Like I mentioned, I feel that internships are very important. And if you're in college and you have an opportunity to apply for internships in the summer, then take advantage of those. Back to the rehab agencies, I think as far as the networking aspect is concerned, I feel that is their weakest point. We have counselors here who don't have degrees in rehabilitation counseling. They've gotten their degrees elsewhere. And obviously their knowledge of what resources are available to the blind community is going to be very limited. And even those who have been in the field for quite some time, you know, how many of them are promoting Career Connect? I think there needs to be a greater push out there from the blind community to network with these VR agencies and make services and workshops and information available to them. I did want to make one comment, Paul. I noticed that Florida did get a NABS affiliate, so your affiliate must be doing something right. So I commend you on that.
Thanks very much. Larry in Orlando, a couple of other comments?
You may be in an area that just doesn't have a lot of opportunity, you know, like a real small town or something like that. And to make it in life, you know, you're going to have to take risks and possibly relocate to an area where the job is. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to go across the country or around the world, but it's something you have to do, because I've had to move a good distance away to make some successes in my life. So that's another thing that they'd have to keep in the back of their mind, that, you know, if they're in an area where there just isn't much job opportunity at all, it's going to be all that much harder.
This is Lisa. When looking for work, try to take advantage of JobLine or the America's Job Bank. That's another resource in terms of looking for jobs. Even though there may not be one within your local area and you may have to be able to relocate, I have done that at least once in terms of relocating. I'd rather be closer to my family, but, you know, I try to tell my family I can't always guarantee that I'll be able to find the job post home. So, you know, networking is the number one key.
Rich?
If it's a goal you have, it's certainly worth exploring. Don't cheat yourself. Don't short sell yourself. Know what your abilities and skills are and go for it. Be the best advocate for yourself that you can be. And it's a tough world out there. I want to say that even there, it's one of these situations where we're not just dealing with a tough job market for people who are blind. It's a tough job market everywhere. And don't be discouraged if it takes a little while to find that perfect job for you. Take advantage of that time. Go out there, volunteer, network. And it seems like what tends to happen sometimes is those opportunities come along when you least expect them. But as discouraging as it can be, just hang in there, keep trying, and you know, something will eventually come up, and it may not even be where you expect or what you expect.
Thanks very much, Lisa. Lisa and Rachel and everybody else. Blind people really do need to find a way to get their skills assessed and to be really sure that they know what their abilities are. Once you do, then it's going to be an awful lot easier for you to be assertive and even pushy if you need to be with counselors about doing a job. Let me thank everyone for your participation in part two of our program on employment and choosing careers for people who are blind and visually impaired. I truly appreciate all of the interaction that we've had tonight and look forward to the opportunity of having many of you join us again for Tuesday topics. Happy job hunting, happy career searching, and happy working. Thanks for listening, and good night. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will explore something that's fairly controversial: blind people and social skills. Do blind people need to be concerned about how people with sight see them? Are blindisms a problem, or is it okay for folks to rock? What should we do to improve our ability to assess our social skills? Things like nonverbal communications are often issues that blind people know very little about, and may be sending messages that they don't intend without even opening their mouths. To learn more about this topic and to express your opinion on the importance of social skills for people who are blind, join us next week on Tuesday Topics.